FM WVNN. Depend on it.
Radio has changed our lives and possibly saved our lives.
Good morning, Tennessee Valley, and you are tuned in to Politics and More, and I'm your host, Shannon Moore, today joined with our co-host for the day, attorney Chris Pankey. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
All right, and a good morning again to everyone who is listening. A lot of different newsworthy items this week, so let's get started with my opening thoughts. The Alabama Senate race saw another contender enter into it this week. Congressman Mo Brooks announced he was running for the United States Senate from Alabama this week at a packed campaign event here in Huntsville, Alabama. He enters the race as the frontrunner and with growing momentum. Now, while we are slightly less than a year out from voting in the Republican primary, Congressman Brooks has built up a conservative base of voters, and he will likely continue to garner support across the state as we head into the campaign season. In other developments, we saw President Biden hold his first press conference this week. And as could be expected, there is a major difference in energy between President Biden's press conference and President Trump's. Things are definitely a lot different this year than they were in the prior administration. When we compare the Biden presidency with Trump's, there's a clear demarcation between the new far left and its vision of America, and Trump's vision of traditional American values and freedom. Now, as conservatives, the midterms will be here next year, and we must work to ensure election integrity and work to get more conservatives elected next year. And those are just a couple of my opening thoughts. And, you know, Chris, that really is going to be one of the big things for us on the right as we go into next year is the midterm elections, because we, for Republicans, we will be going in, while we don't have the White House or the two branches of Congress, we will have the momentum, because typically the party that's on the outside gains seats during those midterm elections.
Well, that's true. And, you know, I think the Democrats have done exactly what we expected them to do, which is this massive overreach. And I think, you know, most of America, you know, that, you know, you've got the liberals that think, oh, it's great. But, you know, I think there's a lot more traditional values Americans that just think it's ridiculous.
Well, and that overreach is going to be something that conservatives are going to have to be pointing out, because it was not, I mean, it's not a surprise for us on the right to see this overreach. I mean, you could easily have predicted it. And that was despite the fact that when President Biden came into office, he was talking so much about how he was going to be reaching out to those on the other side to try to work with them in a more bipartisan unity. But, of course, I don't think I've seen that whatsoever.
No, I mean, the only outreach that Biden's done is to slap them across the face.
Yeah, and so that's why I was talking about, for conservatives, our next chance to try to change some of the direction here is going to be at the midterm elections next year. And, you know, for us in Alabama, we're going to have an election for a new United States Senator from Alabama. As we all know, Senator Richard Shelby is retiring, and Congressman Brooks had his campaign kickoff earlier this week. I went to it. It was Monday in Huntsville, Alabama, and it was a packed house. There were a lot of people who turned out for that. And he goes into this with a lot of momentum.
Well, and, you know, of course, Congressman Brooks has been in office, various offices, you know, for years. But, you know, in the past, where he struggled a little bit is, you know, in South Alabama. But especially with what has happened, you know, this past year, I think it has, you know, raised his name recognition in the southern part of the state. And, I mean, he, you know, couldn't be more closely aligned with Trump than what he is. And that still carries a tremendous amount of weight in a Republican primary.
Oh, yeah. The name ID had been an issue in years past because he's run for other statewide offices. I think maybe starting out with, if I may be correct, I think it was a lieutenant governor, but he's run for other statewide offices. But, you know, many people in South Alabama were not familiar with him, but now that has completely changed. And so he really goes into this with a lot of momentum. There's a lot of conservatives backing him. There are a lot of people there at his rally. And, I mean, he is clearly the front runner. And, you know, he has been out there for President Trump and supported President Trump. So it'll be interesting to see if other people put their names in for the United States Senate race here in Alabama, because clearly he's got a lot of momentum going into this thing.
Right. I mean, also it'll be interesting if Trump decides to come out and endorse someone in this race.
Well, that would make a big difference, and I could see an endorsement going towards Congressman Brooks and everything. So we'll have to wait and see. It that may be come down a little bit more further down the road, because there's still a lot of time. There's other possibilities of people trying to get in and everything. But clearly, when you jump or go into a race and you got that momentum, that just kind of keeps kind of, you know, it's kind of like a snowball. It keeps getting bigger and bigger as it goes down the hill.
Well, everybody wants to be on the winning team.
Yes, yeah. So I have no doubt we will get a very conservative United States senator who reflects the values of Alabama voters.
And that's great, you know, but on a national scale, that really doesn't change things. I mean, it doesn't, you know, tip, you know, the House or the Senate, because, you know, we've got conservative representatives except for one. That one, you know, Terry Sewell, I'm sure she'll get reelected. Mm-hmm. And so you'll still have that one Democrat in that district. And, of course, Shelby, you know, while he may not be ultra arch conservative, he's much more conservative than most. He's a reliable conservative. And so, you know, basically it's just going to be maintaining the status quo. It's not going to change any of those.
Well, and the change the status quo, obviously we've got to get more conservatives elected. And so that's, you know, one of the things that has to be looked at for next year's midterms. One of the biggest things, obviously, is election integrity. That is something I have been talking about since the election. Is elections are governed essentially by state legislatures and your secretary of state in each state, or the secretary of state in each state works to ensure that they're fair and honest. And because of the last national election, we've got to look at what worked and what did not work throughout the United States and ensure that election integrity is maintained, because that's going to be a really big thing if we want to ensure that all votes are counted and, you know, there's not any questions about the doubt of elections. And, you know, we tell you what happened last time, and that's going to be a really big issue, because we've already seen that being talked about at the national level. And we've seen, you know, many on the far left trying to push back at that. And so, in order, before those midterms and before the next national election, we've got to ensure that elections are fair and honest and secure. And, you know, I'll keep talking about that, and I'm sure many other Republicans will as well. So we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more here at Politics and More. Stay tuned. All right, we're back with Politics and More. I'm your host, Shannon Moore, joined with my co-host for the day, Chris Payne. Pinky. And if you would like to chime in, I have a question for us. Our number is 1-866-494-9866. That's 1-866-494-9866. And another one of the big issues or news of worthy events this week was President Joe Biden's press conference. And it kind of made history, for one, being one of the latest press conferences probably in modern times. I don't, Chris, do you remember when, like, a president had a press conference this late into his administration? I mean, most presidents have had them actually fairly soon after they got elected. And so this one kind of made history as being, I think, the latest one that they've had in modern times or whatnot.
Yeah, I mean, it's the latest one in over 100 years. And when it got to that point, I quit keeping track of how late it was running. I mean, it just, they finally, you know, they couldn't keep him in the basement bunker any longer.
Well, I guess quite literally, I mean, he had to have one eventually. And I am sure that even some on the left probably realize that, you know, there's going to have to be a press conference. So he had the press conference this week. I think it lasted roughly about an hour or an hour and 15 minutes. It was, you know, I think relatively short for a press conference, so to speak, because it seems like with President Trump, I mean, he would just like take as many questions as he could. And, you know, there's such a contrast in style between President Trump's press conferences and Joe Biden's press conferences. And I think we would all have to agree that there was a lot of energy in President Trump's press conferences. Now, if you're on the left, you probably didn't like the fact that he was sparring with left-wing reporters, of which there's so many out there. But President Trump was not afraid to take tough questions, and he gave back as good as they tried to give him, so to speak. There was a lot of information that would be gained from President Trump's press conferences. And so I think, again, obviously there's a major difference in style with a President Trump press conference and a President Biden press conference. And, you know, another thing that I think some people notice is President Biden, I mean, a lot of the information he was giving actually came from cue cards or note cards that he had with him. Another kind of, you know, a contrast, and also a point that I think a lot of conservatives are going to be picking up on, maybe other voters as well.
Well, you know, you heard quite a few commentators talk about, you know, how, you know, in particular, one of the ones I remember was Chris Wallace, who was talking about, you know, all the world leaders that he's interviewed, you know, going all the way back to Reagan. And we're not talking about just U.S. presidents, but other world leaders, and how he couldn't recall in all of those. I mean, he didn't put a specific number on it, but, you know, it's dozens and dozens of these interviews. He couldn't recall that leader ever having any sort of notes or anything like that, because, you know, the fact of the matter is the President of the United States is supposed to be the policymaker. So it is his policy. Mm-hmm. So he should know what his policy is, because it's his policy. He shouldn't have to look at, you know, notes to be reminded what he should say on how to answer that particular question.
Yeah. And again, I mean, obviously people on the right have picked up on this, but I do think that if you are a Biden supporter or agree with his policies, that may give you some thought there as to how familiar he is with them.
But, you know, the real question is, I mean, if you really think about it, I mean, if you go back and you look at Joe Biden through the years, I mean, there's plenty of historical record, you know, video evidence, you know, all of that. Mm-hmm. Is it really Biden's policy, or is he just a mouthpiece? I mean, because honestly, these policies are way left of traditionally what Biden's positions have been.
Well, yeah, and clearly his administration is going to be much further left than he as a career politician has been. Because, again, I mean, for many years he probably would fall under the classic liberal definition of a politician. But the Democrat Party as a whole, and especially nationally, has moved extremely far to the left. So much so that Democrat socialist has become a very, you know, locked word in the Democrat Party. And so with President Biden, many of these policies that are coming out much more reflect that far left wing of the Democrat Party, which has, you know, kind of firmly entrenched itself and is, you know, calling, you know, a lot of the shots now in terms of what the direction of Democrat thought and policy is.
Well, you know, like I said, it just, he looked weak is the best word that I can think of. I mean, both physically and mentally. And, you know, it's just like we were talking about a little bit ago. I mean, you hate to say it, but he is not projecting strength. He, the way he comes across, if there was a world leader of some adversary of ours, now is the time that, you know, if I was that world leader, now's the time when I'd be making that push against the United States, whether it's, you know, Russia annexing more territory, whether it's the Chinese taking more territory in the Pacific. I mean,
well, that's going to be obviously, I think, a challenge that President Biden's administration is going to have to be dealing with over the next few years, because currently they're really trying to focus on the domestic. And for many in the left, oftentimes domestic policy is really their kind of, you know, their favorite area to be focused upon. But as we have seen over the years, I mean, from President Trump to President Obama to the Bushes to President Clinton, a lot of times foreign policy will and what's going on in the world will take center stage at some point in an administration's focus, just because things develop, emergencies happen. And right now, the Biden administration is truly looking kind of inwards at the domestic policy, but there will be a time they're going to have to be also focused on some of these issues that we're dealing with, because we've got several things going on in the world that could easily develop into crisis for America. We've still got, you know, the situation with North Korea.
The Biden administration does not have crisis. They only have challenges.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot. So there may be challenges that come up, and we're going to talk a little bit about that towards the end as well. But I think that, you know, kind of the what we saw from the press conference will have some bearing on his presentation, will have a bearing on also how other world leaders react to him. And that's going to be something that will be a challenge for them.
Well, it will, you know, and if you think about it, what it really boils down to, the reason whether you want to say Democrats or the liberals or left, the reason they're so focused on domestic as opposed to, you know, foreign policy, mm-hmm. is because what they're truly focused on is power and control and enriching themselves and their friends. And they can only do that domestically. Mm-hmm. I mean, now to some degree they can enrich themselves with, you know, the Clinton World Tour and what have you. But that's the reason they're so focused on the domestic, almost to the exclusion of foreign policy, is they want to focus on what can we do to increase our control over people? What can we do to increase our power? And that's the reason they have such a strong domestic focus.
Yeah. And again, though, it's just historically, and no matter what, foreign policy and their approach to some of these challenges that may develop overseas, especially with some of these countries that are, you know, kind of flexing their muscle, will become a big deal, whether this year or sometime in President Biden's administration. Although he also did make a, and it was kind of interesting. I don't know if it was meant kind of as tongue in cheek or he was serious, but you know, he did actually say he was going to run again in 4 years. So I think that was kind of a surprise to a lot of people that he was actually bringing that up. But again, I'm not completely sure if that was meant to be taken literal or not. Did you see that part, Chris?
Well, I did, and I don't know that he will. I mean, at this point, I'll be surprised if he finishes his first term.
All right. Well, let's take a break. We're going to be right back with more here at Politics and More. Stay tuned. All right, we're back with Politics and More. Our phone number is 1-866-494-9866. That's 1-866-494-9866. And we've been talking about President Biden's press conference that he had earlier this week. I think actually it was on Thursday and everything. And some of the highlights from that and some of our observations from the press conference. And another one of the issues that you may be following that's been going on is the border crisis. Now, Chris made a big point. The Biden White House is not willing to concede that it is a crisis.
No, it's just a challenge.
Sort of like a lot of things can be challenges in life. But I think we'll stick with calling it a crisis here and everything. You okay with that, Chris?
Well, yeah. I mean, and the fact of the matter is, I mean, when you've got a facility that's designed to house 250 and it's holding 4,000, that kind of by definition is a crisis.
And, you know, here's the irony of this whole thing, because quite literally what is happening on the border right now is – one is probably, and I think it's numbers-wise actually worse than maybe the height of some of the problems that the Trump administration was having to deal with. But we remember just how much the press, especially the far-left press, was complaining about that. It was almost on a continual basis claiming that President Trump was keeping children in cages. I mean, quite literally, that's what it was called.
Right. I mean, and now the only difference is instead of it being, you know, a chain link, what they were calling the cage, now they're plexiglass. But there's more children stacked on top of each other during this time of COVID that they're not even testing them for.
I mean, it is sometimes hard to understand just how this narrative by the left-wing media gets shaped. I mean, it's just like they are super creative with shaping it to fit their agenda.
Well, and you know it's bad when, you know, ultra-leftist Jake Tapper is even saying, look, you know, they're not giving us access to these facilities, and they're basically saying, you know, whenever we can get this situation fixed, then we'll let you in and see it. I mean, so if he's going to actually call that out, you know it's bad.
Yeah, and obviously it's going to have to be dealt with eventually, because it just cannot keep kind of going on. Because now we're in a couple of months into the Biden administration, and I think most people are going to agree that some of the messaging that came out from the Biden administration and from President Biden himself, especially before he became president and he was on the campaign trail, has essentially directly led to this crisis.
Well, how else could you explain migrants showing up wearing Biden t-shirts?
Well, that's my point. I mean, this is not something we're making up. This is not something that Republicans are making up. This is actually happening. I mean, they have Biden t-shirts on.
Well, and they've interviewed some of these people. I mean, I saw one where, I mean, they specifically asked them, you know, if Trump had been reelected president, would you have come? And they said, definitely not. And they said, so is the reason that you came is because Biden was elected? And they said, absolutely. I mean, that's from one of these, you know, migrants themselves, right out of their mouth.
Yeah. And so what happened last year, as you just continually had the left media and you had left-wing politicians and even Joe Biden when he was a candidate continuing to knock the Trump administration's immigration policies and put out a different message that essentially was as close to an open border message as you can get.
Well, and I think the whole thing is, you know, they try and talk about, you know, Trump's policies. He was so inhumane.
Well,
and
that's
this sort of thing.
That's kind of where it was focused upon.
But the whole point is these are people that are illegally essentially invading our country. I mean, we shouldn't roll out the red carpet and say, oh, we're so glad to see you. Now, does that mean we should starve them and, you know, leave them outside in the rain? Well, of course not, because we are a humane people. But they should essentially be treated like people in jail, because that's what it should be. They should be detained until they are deported, and that should be that.
And I think a lot of people on the left who have these intentions of, oh, we need to be helping these individuals, may forget that this almost open door policy that was at least theoretically put out there by Biden and many on the left last year creates a crisis that, you know, a lot of these people have traveled from a long ways away, and there's a lot of bad things that happen to these people on the road to getting into America that, you know, I think people just don't really realize that these well-intentioned statements cause a lot of serious problems.
Well, and it's just like you were saying. I mean, you know, you had this group of senators that went down, you know, to see what was going on, and they saw a body floating, you know, down the river. I mean, many people die trying to make this trip. What should be done is, if you want to encourage legal immigration, say, look, you know, we're glad to have you come, but there's a process to follow. That's one thing. Legal immigration is great. I mean, this country was, in fact, built by immigrants. We mm-hmm. all came here from somewhere, unless you are, you know, Native American. But the problem is they're saying, well, we can't, you know, send these people back. I mean, they're coming from a terrible place. Well, in my opinion, everywhere in the world, but America's a terrible place. So, but we can't put, you know, 4.5 billion people in the United States.
No, and again, I mean, all these statements that were made last year by many people on the left have now resulted in this crisis where, you know, right now, a lot of these border towns and even the federal government are not able to deal with this. And then people are being released without, like, court dates to go, I guess, before immigration authorities. And then there's a lot of people who are testing positive for COVID who are just being released. And so the problems are being exacerbated because of these statements that were put out last year without actually the logic behind, well, what are you going to do if a lot of people show up? And what does that create? That creates truly a humanitarian disaster. And that's what they're having to deal with along the border. And it's just ironic that the last few months they've tried to kind of sweep it under the rug to some extent because there's not been a lot of direct addressing this problem. And in fact, there's been kind of an attempt to kind of control the messaging by not allowing reporters free access to a lot of these facilities.
Well, and of course, they've also got to, you know, say it's all Trump's fault. You know, he dismantled all these facilities, blah, blah, blah. You know, and that's just not the case. I mean, the reason that they're having these problems, the reason they're overcrowded is because they opened the floodgates, just like you said, with the things they said and the, you know, the policies that they've put out there and, you know, basically coming in and all of the policies that Trump had in place mm-hmm. that had slowed this flow down, wiped all those out on day one with an executive order.
Well, yeah, things were getting much more manageable along the border, because I think both Republicans and Democrats can agree that over the last 20, 25 years, things continue to get worse along the border, and there was not good control of the border, and but President Trump made that one of his big priorities. He also got the wall. He was building many areas of the wall, adding to the wall, repairing old parts of the wall, getting the border much less porous. And now President Biden, I think for the executive order, stopped construction of the wall too. So it's just not going to happen. And now we have essentially a reversal of President Trump's policies and the wrong sort of message that's been sent to so many people. I mean, it doesn't surprise me. If I was in a poor country and there was, you know, a lot of problems, well, with President Biden, the message has been almost simply, come on in and we'll take care of you. And so he's given a lot of almost false hope to a lot of individuals.
Well, you know, and he came out and he said, you know, we're going to have a 100-day pause on deportations. Well, you had several interviews with these migrants that they basically took that as you've got 100 days to get to America.
Yeah, so who has this really benefited? It's not benefited American citizens, because now we're going to have a problem with having to figure out how to solve this crisis. And it's not benefited those people who are making a long and dangerous journey up here, because there's no guarantee about their safety. Ultimately, I don't know what's going to happen to many of them, but it's a long and dangerous journey for them. And essentially, it's almost a false hope that they may have about this and whether they were going to be able to permanently settle here or not.
Well, but it's really not, if you think about it, because what's happening is, if they are family units or if they come with a child, there's a high likelihood that they're going to get released into the United States. If they're an unaccompanied minor, they're absolutely going to be released into the United States. So there's a very high likelihood, if they make the trip, they're going to be in the country.
Well, that is true. That's another way to kind of look at that as well. So, I mean, and if that's the case, then it really is almost a kind of a genuine open borders policy, except for you have the layer of they can get detained, but then released.
Right. I mean, so that's what happens. They get detained, then they get released, and they get told to, you know, come back to your court hearing that right now they're running about 4 years behind.
Yeah, I think I have heard varying accounts that some of them were not actually being given court hearings, that they're supposed to, I guess, go to an immigration office and you know, announce themselves. And, of course, you know, whether that happens or not.
Probably not.
So this will be an issue that I think that President Biden's going to have to be dealing with over the next several months. Whether things get better or not seems kind of shaky at best.
Well, at his best, Biden seems pretty shaky. I mean, he can't even walk up the stairs to Air Force One without falling three times because, quote unquote, the wind blew him over.
Well, and, you know, that's going to be something that people will kind of look at. And, you know, again, that'll also go to what I was talking about the foreign policy issues that will have to be dealt with over the next couple of years, because there's several different countries out there that are probably going to be trying to flex their muscle over the next few years, especially since the Biden administration is going to be taking such a different approach to those countries as compared to the Trump administration. But we'll talk about that a little bit more when we come back for our last segment here today on Politics and More. Stay tuned. All right, we're back with Politics and More. And now calling numbers 1-866-494-9866. And we just finished talking about the border crisis that's going on in southern Texas and along some of the other states in the desert southwest. And, you know, one of probably the first big challenges is President Biden would say. But we're also going to see a lot of challenges and who knows, even crisis over the next several years with regard to foreign policy. And we've already seen the Biden administration interacting a little bit with China, for instance. There is a high-level delegation meeting about 2 weeks ago where I believe United States Secretary of State and other U.S. delegates met with their Chinese counterpart, so to speak. And it kind of resulted in some frosty statements by the Chinese against the United States. And, you know, it's not completely surprising because we see on the world stage a lot of things shifting, whereas China is becoming more economically powerful and truly trying to push towards superpower supremacy, so to speak. But I have no doubt that they are going to try to, you know, continue to expand their sphere of influence worldwide, and especially there in Southeast Asia and that Pacific Rim area. And, you know, obviously President Biden is probably going to take a somewhat different approach to dealing with them as President Trump did. But we already saw China pushing back against the Biden administration, almost an attempt to try to set the rules of everything. And so that's going to be, I think, a big challenge as we go forward.
Well, and we've already allowed them to develop a larger Navy than we have. They have obviously a larger army than we have. They have, you know, all of these what are called area denial missiles, medium range and intermediate range missiles to basically take out our ships to try and keep us from coming in. So we've already let them get a leg up on us militarily in the region. And you know that traditionally the Democratic policy is not to have robust military spending.
Yeah, yeah. And so I think in terms of countries that the administration is going to really have to, it's going to be very challenging for them, is obviously going to be with China. And, you know, outside of that, there was kind of a tiff, so to speak, between Joe Biden and Putin about 2 weeks ago as well, where, you know, Vladimir Putin was challenging him to almost like an online debate. So, you know, things are probably not off to a great start between those either.
Well, you know, I don't think I've ever seen Putin referring to notes. So I'm sure that if there was a debate between these two, the whole world would say,
well,
Putin's going to come off much stronger.
That's probably what he was trying to do. And, you know, again, that my point is although the Biden administration is really focused on domestic policies right now, and a lot of these policies are extremely far left, almost in that Democrat socialist idea, there are going to be a number of different foreign policy issues that we could already see becoming problems. And of course, we already know that, you know, North Korea remains an issue. And, you know, I don't know how they will deal with the North Korean problem. We saw how President Trump was dealing with it, and he made a lot of history. I mean, he worked to actually establish somewhat of a more friendlier relationship with the North Korean president. I mean, there was at least talks between them.
Well, and, you know, so now we've seen that, you know, North Korea has started missile testing again, and now it's not even Kim Jong-un coming out and saying things. It's his sister coming out and saying that if, you know, if Biden wants to sleep peacefully for the next 4 years, he doesn't need to create any sort of a stink.
Yeah, so, and so we got the North Korean thing, we've got China, and another country that I think, you know, kind of remains a pressure cooker is Iran in the Middle East. And, you know, the threat of a nuclear Iran again remains a big issue. And, you know, hopefully things will continue to go okay in the Middle East over there. But that will again also be another big thing that the Biden administration is probably going to have to deal with at some point, other than just attempting to kick the can down the road, which has been happened before.
Well, and I just saw, headline flash across breaking news a little bit ago. Haven't even had a chance to really look into this story, but it was announcing that China and Iran have signed a 25-year cooperation pact. Now, cooperation in what areas and with what, you don't know, but of course, China's a nuclear power. So if they were to decide, well, you know, we're going to help Iran along that road, you know, and it just, that entanglement is not a good development whatsoever.
Yeah, obviously geopolitics, as political science actually like to call it, has changed a lot over the last 20 to 30 years, especially since we saw the fall of the Soviet Union. The issues with Russia, while they still remain or nowhere near as problematic as probably how the U.S. will deal with some of these other, you know, up-and-coming countries and the changes with them. And that's going to present a lot of challenges to President Biden's administration that I'm just not completely sure they have ever actually really given it serious thought to.
Right. I mean, I'm kind of the opinion they don't give a whole lot of serious thought to much of anything.
Well, that's also always possible, but we will see. The world continues to move on, and presidents have to deal with situations that sometimes they've not expected. And I think the foreign policy challenge is going to be one of the President Biden's biggest issues to have to deal with over the next couple of years. But everyone, have a great rest of your day. You know, we're in the springtime season, so we've seen some bad weather already this week, unfortunately. And, you know, I think we're supposed to have some storms today in the North Alabama area. So always stay weather prepared and pay attention and everything. And we'll see y'all back next week here at Politics and More. Same time, same channel. Everyone, have a great weekend.